the bubble.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good evening and welcome to Burst of the Bubble live on Cam FM. I'm Michael Quintario and joining me this week is Rich Wehrem.
Hello again.
Because Chris is away on holiday.
Yeah, so I'm the rather poorer, rather rubbisher replacement for Chris. So I apologise in advance for all those Chris Motion fans out there. I know there are some. And I encourage you, if you think I'm not as good as Chris, to email in and tell me exactly how I poorly compare to Chris.
Well, this is the show where we look at the more unusual news stories of the past week and then just let our minds wander.
That's right. And often they wander in some quite interesting and strange directions, I find.
We're starting with quite a strange topic, so it'll be interesting to see where we go from here. We're starting with a little section on space travel, because we heard this week that the people in the Mars 500 project, which is examining how psychologically people would cope with being sent on a mission to Mars, they've landed and have gone out to play in their sandpit.
Absolutely, and it's quite literally a sandpit. Whilst the people in the Mars... So, let's back up a bit here. This was a Mars mission which didn't actually leave the planet. This is a Mars mission that's taking place on the surface of the Earth in a large shed. And they've locked... how many people is it?
Oh, I think it's five.
I think it's five people. Five people...
Or six.
Six people in a shed. A very nice wooden-clad shed with a sauna, I believe, for about 8 months. And now they're going to let them play in a sandpit. Not all of them, mark you. Is it two of them or three of them are going to be allowed to play in a sandpit for an hour and 12 minutes. And then they've got to
minutes.
Go back in... Minutes. Minutes,
so, this is a space version of minutes.
Yes, it's a special space word that means minutes. So they get to play in a sandpit for an hour and 12 minutes and then go back in their shed for 8 months to presumably tell all their families all about how amazing their sandpit play was.
I like the fact that it's apparently red sand to simulate it being Mars. I'm not convinced that and being cut off from the outside world is enough. For starters...
Well, you want them to make a little bit of an effort. You would be very disappointed if I'd spent 8 months in a shed waiting for my time in a sandpit and I found out when I got there that they hadn't even bothered to get... dyed sand. They'd just gone to Jewson's and got a load of sandpit sand and sprinkled on the floor and said, that'll do. I've been in pubs where they've had sand on the floor like that. I wouldn't wait 8 months to go into that pub.
One thing that's amusing me is are there like walls that they can see when they're on Mars?
I like to think that there's some windows, because if there's only two people allowed out into the sandpit, I like to have the idea that the other three people, or four people, are pressed their face against the window of the shed going, oh no, even that small amount of excitement would be amazing for me. But no, they're denied that small amount of excitement, and instead have to say they're looking at their wonderful wood-clad walls and saunas. I was actually particularly impressed that they have a sauna rather than anything else, because apparently in space you can't have a bath, which because of all the weightlessness, but you can have saunas.
I hadn't thought about that. Obviously, they're not getting the weightlessness, but they're getting the sauna anyway.
Exactly. So they're sitting there going, well, you know, this is simulating Mars mission. No weightlessness, no muscle wastage, but I do get to have a sauna all the time. It does make you think, though, that they'll be really, really looking forward to a cold shower when they get out.
I'm just going back to your idea of people just having their faces pushed right up to the, sadly, non-existent window. You're making it sound like some weird sort of... like game show, like the Crystal Maze or something.
Oh, absolutely.
They're going out onto the surface to pretend to run experiments. And then you can just imagine all the people on the windows just communicating with them over the radio, like, can you see the Martian crystal?
Yeah, why don't you put the lander on top of the hill? Put the lander on the... No, not in the hill, on top of the hill.
And someone's
got
it
wrong.
And someone's got the Mars rover, and they're just controlling it by remote control, and everyone's going, left, 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 left.
Like
and they're crashing it right.
I like to think that the ground control staff are all sitting there playing harmonicas outside saying, you've got 2 minutes left in your sandpit. Things like this.
I have seen that they do get fake delay transmission delays on their messages from ground control.
Absolutely.
Taking into account the time it would take.
It would take 12 minutes, I believe, for signals to reach Mars from Earth, which is quite fast when you think about it. It's the speed of light and everything. So, yes, all their correspondence is delayed by 12 minutes. But then... if I may go on a slight tangent for a while, my new phone, I have a new phone. I used to have a Motorola phone, which was brilliant. It had this amazing feature, which where you've got a text message and you miss the bing, it would bing again in 5 minutes, tell you there was another text message. My new phone does not do that, which means that I quite often live my life with a 12-minute conversation delay, and I have no ill effects. So what these people are doing is that they've just effectively given all these people in the shed brand new shiny HTC phones, which don't have this bingle feature.
Yeah. So, yes, and lots of mobile phones, I'm sure, will have or have not those features.
And you know one thing that doesn't have a 12-minute delay?
What?
It's emailing the show.
Ah, yes.
And how might you email the show, Michael?
You can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or if you prefer not to navigate away from your webpage to your email program, you can go on to our website, www.camfm.co.uk, and use the web form there.
And please do. Please do contact us, because I, for one, find it really quite exciting when we have email from the outside world. I feel as if I'm talking to someone, rather than actually a very large, black, furry thing, which is stuck in my mouth most of the time. That's the microphone for anyone who's thinking I'm trying to make some sort of interesting analogy. I'm not. There's literally a very large black furry thing that's in front of my face right now, and it's not Michael.
But also, yes, it'd be nice in our. We're not going on a mission to Mars for 500 and odd days, but we are stuck in a little nuclear bunker of the studio for the rest of the hour.
Absolutely.
So any contact
would be very much appreciated. We are stuck here staring at the orange and white walls, hoping against hope that we can get our time in the CamFM sauna once the Arts Joe people vacate it.
I'm looking forward to the sandpit.
Absolutely. The CamFM sandpit is an exciting thing to behold. It too has red sand, but that's mostly because someone spilled a J2O in it.
Moving on, we've got a very tenuously linked story here.
Yeah. So this is a very tenuously linked to space travel, in the sense that space travel is boring, and if you had the choice, you would sleep through it.
As has been shown in multiple films in the past.
Absolutely. And what also is boring is winter in Alaska. And so, people in Alaska live through the winter because they don't have the skills of the black bears of Alaska. The black bears of Alaska have got it sorted. They spend about 7 months in hibernation during the winter. The particular reference we've got here, in fact, if I may quote from the top of it, thank you for just scrolling off that there, Michael. It says, so the black bears of Alaska spend up to 7 months in hibernation each year without eating, drinking, urinating or defecating. Or, as I like to think of it, playing World of Warcraft. I had an ex-girlfriend who played World of Warcraft. You know, I'm sure she's not listening. She lives in America now, and she could easily spend 7 months not moving away from the World of Warcraft.
And then afterwards, it says it is as if nothing had happened, which is also the case.
Exactly, you have achieved precisely nothing apart from having a large number of people on the internet be cross at you.
So the thing here is that they haven't really gained anything from the experiment that they've done, apart from they put some radio transmitters into the animals to measure their body temperature, heart rate and muscle activity, and that's all they did. They're like, oh look, when it hibernates it slows down.
And what I particularly like about this is the idea of hibernating in space has been around since, I think, the very days of space travel.
Since the idea of space.
Exactly. 50 or 60 years worth this has been around, and people have known that bears hibernate for at least that long, if not further. And so what appears to happen here is some scientists have said, you know these things that we want to do? Well, look, there's this animal that does it. We should tell the papers. And the other scientists in the scientist community have gone, that's a good idea. We'll tell the papers. Do we know how they hibernate? No. Do we know if it's anything that is applicable to humans? No. Shall we just claim that we want to do this anyway? Yes. That'll sell papers. That'll make people think science is worthwhile.
And there's one quote about the fact that they found out that after the hibernation season, the bear's metabolism remained suppressed for up to 3 weeks after they emerged from sleep. And someone was going, Heller, the scientist, said, that indicates that there's some biochemical mechanism that suppresses metabolism, and that could be a very interesting discovery.
Or they're just really, really tired.
Yeah, it's when you get up. Did you try giving them coffee?
Exactly. Now, I got up this morning, and it was.
It sounds like an achievement.
No, it was an achievement, because I was out partying hard last night, you know, up until the moderate hours, and I found it quite hard. My metabolism was definitely suppressed, right up until the point where I had a cooked breakfast and three coffees inside me. Then I was it. So I imagine what just happens is this is in these 3 weeks after emerging, they just haven't had a Wetherspoons brunch yet, and they haven't had a coffee. And the lack of those two vitally important things for mammalian metabolism has no wonder suppressed it. I was effectively a black bear when I woke up this morning.
Also, have we worked out what 3 weeks compared to 7 months? What does that compare to if we look for overnight, just like a sleep overnight?
Well, it's just less than a seventh of a night, so that would be about 40 or 50 minutes. So yeah, I'd say that 40 or 50 minutes after waking up, I'm not really with it at all. In fact, this morning, I managed to fail to make a cup of coffee three separate ways.
What did you
do? I first of all filled the kettle and didn't switch it on. Then, instead of putting instant coffee in my mug, I took instant coffee, took the teaspoon, took the instant coffee on the teaspoon, and then put it back in the jar. And then, after having made myself a coffee, I put it on the table, walked away, and utterly forgot about its very existence. So after having finally managed to make my coffee, after going through hoops and hurdles and all manner of hardships untold, I never actually drank it before it went cold. So that's the end of my story about this morning. I'm sure that's very exciting.
It was all right. So I'm hoping that the Black Bear research might also find a way to help you get up earlier.
Yeah, well, I probably shouldn't have hit the night nurse quite so much last night, I think.
Well, you remember you can email in any comments on the stories we've had, studio@camfm.co.uk, or via the website at www.camfm.co.uk. And we'll be back after this.
97.2 camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst of Bubble. That was Girls and Boys by Blur. Classic
early 90s hit there.
And now, as seems to be very common on Burst of Bubble, we have an animal section.
That's because animal stories are intrinsically funny, because animals are intrinsically funny with their sort of doe eyes and lack of understanding of the world around them.
Well, we've got one that's a bit of a follow-up to a previous story that we had on here.
Exactly. In fact, last time I was on the show, I believe. So there's a lovely sort of rich wear and continuity that comes along with this.
In that previously we were talking about the rat problem in number 10 Downing Street.
Oh, ho, 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 again.
Yes, there are the obvious jokes. They've all been done.
In fact, I think we did a load of meta jokes the first time round of this, where we didn't actually make any of the jokes, but we stated very much like we've just done about the meta jokes.
But, yes, basically, they have got a cat to deal with the rats.
Yeah, so as Chris said last time we were here, they asked David Cameron, would you like to have a cat or would you like to hire someone to get rid of the rats? And quite reasonably, he went, I don't know, it doesn't really matter to me. And then there was a large kick-up of a fuss in Downing Street amongst the pro-cat and the anti-cat faction, which culminated in a fight in the gardens of Downing Street. Sadly, this wasn't televised, but it was narrated on Radio 4, which is quite fun. But ultimately, it appears the pro-cat faction has won.
I'm a bit disappointed with the name of the cat, though. The cat's called Larry.
Exactly. Now, the previous cat was called Humphrey, as obvious reference to Sir Humphrey Appleby. I'm not 100% sure where the name Larry comes from. Do we have information on where it comes from?
I don't think so, no. It's someone who was in London's Battersea Dogs and Cats home. So, obviously, someone that they'd just... Some cat that they've just found in there and thought might be a good ratter.
Well, they must have had some evidence to believe that it would be a good ratter. I can't believe that our government would go out and spend precisely zero of our money on a rescue cat with no knowledge at all about whether they were useful or not.
A spokesman said that he'd shown a very strong predatory drive and enjoyed playing with toy mice. Toy mice is not the point.
Exactly. I like playing with toy cars. It doesn't mean I'm going to go and chase them down the street.
Or, in fact, start driving cars around down the street.
Or, yes, or indeed try to kill cars or any of those sort of things. I'm not going to do it. Any toy that I play with does not show I want to go and chase that sort of thing. You know, I play with toy aeroplanes. I mean, I want to go and try and chase an aeroplane.
A different person. I'm assuming this is not the same person because this says according to Downing Street rather than a spokesman. Larry has a high chase drive and hunting instinct, which makes it sound like he's going to be like the star of a new movie or something.
Absolutely.
We'll have mice chases and hunting and...
I did notice that they have a lovely picture of the cat, which is sort of Jess from Postman Pat style black and white cat.
Aww.
Now, again, you look at Jess from Postman Pat. Imagine Jess from Postman Pat audience, everyone who's listening at the moment. Now, imagine that next to a rat. I think Jess is going to run away. Larry the cat will run away from a rat. They might see mice, but mice are not rats. Rats are big, mice are small. Rats are evil, mice are cute. Rats are black, mice vary. You don't get sugar-coated... Well, you don't get sugar-coated mice, but you don't get sugar rats made of sugar that you give to small children, right? Mice are cute, which is why they provide no threat to cats, and they chase them, and then they give them to you as presents. Rats are not the sort of thing that cats chase.
But it's known as a chief mouser to the cabinet office, not a chief ratter.
But they have a rat problem. They don't have a mouse problem. They probably don't have a mouse problem, because I imagine they've got a number of cats that look after it. Sorry, this is something that annoys me, the difference between mouse and cats.
Also, mouse and cats?
Mouse and cats, yes.
They're quite obvious.
They are very different, yes. They are habitual enemies.
That annoys you.
But I also noticed they have a nice little table there. I actually give the name of the Downing Street cats for the past few years. So we did say that Humphrey was the name of the last one. But
it wasn't the last one.
It actually wasn't, no. Sybil was the name of the one that preceded Humphrey and preceded Larry. Humphrey was around from 1989 to 97. Sybil was around for 2007. And then appears to have just wandered off somewhere. So, obviously, Sybil didn't have the staying power of Humphrey. There was a cat called Wilberforce, which was in presence for the entirety of the 1970s, which I think is quite staying power on the part of Wilberforce.
But I like the fact that also Larry arrived via van, carried in a covered cage. It's kind of like the ultimate sort of privacy.
Absolutely. You know, it's like when you see people arriving at court with group four security vans or something like that. I would love to have the mental picture that Larry came in a cage and a load of photographers ran up with cameras, pushing it against the side, tried desperately to snap a photo of Larry the cat, looking slightly annoyed.
Yeah, and all these like big burly bruisers surrounding and go, no photos, please. Absolutely. No photos. The new chief mouser to the cabinet will be appearing and will be giving a press conference tomorrow.
And the Sun Tittle Tattle page has pictures of him and saying, oh goodness, look at what Larry the Cat's like to wear. Nothing! That's a bold statement. Lady Gaga's got nothing on that, you know.
It's like all the tabloids are just going to start delving into the history of Larry the Cat
Before he joined the cabinet, exactly. Yeah. Now, presumably, since Larry the Cat came from a rescue place, he's had a bit of a checkered life. I imagine if you look research into the life of Larry the Cat, you might find Asbos and hanging around on street corners.
You know, true rags to riches style.
Exactly. You know, it might be from the proper sort of inner city slums right out to the very top of government. In fact, I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's a film of this coming out next year. Larry the Cat, the great British film sensation of 2012.
You wish you had a better name for that, like Larry the Cat.
I don't know. I think I'd go and see a film called Larry the Cat. I think it has a sort of charm about it. There's a film at the moment called Paul about an alien, which is very much the same sort of thing, isn't it? Like Paul the Alien.
It's not even Paul the Alien, it's just
Paul. It's just called Paul, and that's a British comedy, so you could easily have a British comedy called Larry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, as a comedy, like a bit of slapstick.
Absolutely.
Cats off. Landing on their feet.
Yes. You run around the corner, sees a rat, goes, and runs away.
Yeah, the Benny Hill theme tune plays in the background.
It's not comedy unless there's Benny Hill theme tune running in the background. It's a well-known rule of comedy, that is. It's in the 20 Rules of Comedy. It's number 6.
I kind of want to ask what the others are now.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have the full rule with me, but I happen to know that number 6 is the Benny Hill theme tune. I think number 1 is You Can Say Anything Like Against the French. Oh, yes, or maybe timing, yes. But moving on into similar animal stories, that's a brilliant, brilliant segue there.
Another thing that cats eat, fish. And
absolutely.
There's been a magic trick of goldfish swimming in formation like they were the fish equivalent to the Red Arrows.
Absolutely. So a little bit of background on this story. A Chinese magician, who is very well known in China, it would appear, wanted to perform at a televised variety show a trick where he takes a number of goldfish, puts them in a tank, does some mystical, strange incantation over the top of it, and they start swimming in formation, which you might think, gosh, that's quite an exciting trick. But he forgot the one important rule about people and the popular culture, which is you can do anything you like to people, but you must do nothing to animals.
Even if they're goldfish, which Liu Huili of the Daowen campaign group...
That was a brave attempt.
Yes, I don't think I pronounced that right.
Should we just call him Liu?
They said goldfish are small creatures that anyone can easily buy and abuse or even kill, which I think was... Well, it was meant to be a thing about these poor and unprotected goldfish, but to me sounds a little bit like, yeah, anyone can go and get a goldfish, anyone can abuse a goldfish, kill a goldfish, go on.
You think that's the thing the animal rights people are saying? They say the great thing about goldfish is unlike cats, you can abuse them, you can kill them. No one will know, you can buy a replacement goldfish, you'll never tell the difference.
I know it's not what animal rights activists would say, but it just, without shorn of any other context, that's what that sentence comes across as.
But you see, the problem with the argument they're using is that to their argument, it appears to be, so it is possible to do horrendous, horrible and nasty things to goldfish. Here is a magician who uses goldfish. Therefore, ergo and because, the things he must be doing to the goldfish must be horrible and nasty. Whereas the very point of being a magician is that you don't tell people how you're doing this trick. Now, they have presumed how he is doing this trick by just, in essence, making it up. And they have made up the fact that it must be magnets. And the reason they've used magnets is because I imagine, like all people who aren't scientists, they assume magnets work by deep, dark magic. And he is a magician, and hence he has the power of magnetism in order to influence and change animal behaviour.
But a brilliant riposte against the idea
that he
uses magnets, saying, if I used magnets, the fish would stick together.
Now, you can't really argue against that, can you? You would think they would go, yes, if I put a magnet in fish A and a magnet in fish B, as soon as fish A and fish B happen to be close to each other, you'd end up with some sort of hybrid fish bound together by the power of magnetic force.
Unless, of course, they had opposite poles of the magnets, in which case you could get two goldfish, which sadly could never come together.
Oh, exactly.
We were sad if they liked each other. That could be our next animal film.
Exactly.
The sad tale of two magnetized goldfish. Their love could never be.
The Romeo and Juliet story of our time. It'll probably be an animated film with computer animation of two goldfish who accidentally swallow opposing pole magnets, and they can only join together by putting their back ends together. That's a horrible image, isn't it?
Really? Yeah, move on.
Yeah, but sort of push me, pull you effect, but in fish form.
Some people say I use electricity or high technology. They can say what they want, but the fish are safe, he added.
So I don't understand why you couldn't have just trained the fish.
How do you train fish?
I don't know, but he's a magician, right? His job is to do things in non-obvious and slightly interesting and innovative ways. And I mean, goldfish are animals, and animals are not entirely stupid. Goldfish are quite stupid as animals go, it must be said. But surely you could do things like put a little trail of food in the water by magic, or a little bit of thread which has got some honey upon it or something like that, and they'll go nom 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 nom. I mean, goldfish are not incapable of being trained. I know that everyone says they've got a 5-second memory, but those people are wrong. They're wrong. That's just untrue. You can train a goldfish. They may have just trained the goldfish. He may have nurtured these goldfish from when they were very small little eggs. And when they first broke out, he would nurture them and very carefully with his hands guide them along routes where he had laid sort of laden threads of wonderful honey goodness. And these goldfish might be having the best time of their life. Every time they're on stage, they didn't go, oh, gosh, it's going to be the honey thread time again. Nom, 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 nom. How would you put a magnet in a goldfish? How would you actually do it?
I wouldn't, personally.
Okay, how would one do it? How would one put a magnet in a goldfish? Just think about this for a minute. Like, I've given you a magnet. You look a magnet, right? There's a little horseshoe shape. I just assume all magnets are
horseshoe. You can get tiny little
bar.
Magnet.
Okay, but I've given you that and a goldfish. And I imagine this was on the Crystal Maze. You have 2 minutes to put this magnet in the goldfish. They're not going to do it, okay? No matter how many people you have telling you how to put a magnet in a goldfish, it's not going to work.
The other way.
Exactly, the other way. No, don't do that. Oh, the goldfish have stuck their bums together. Oh, no. You know, get the crystal now.
No, I don't know. Well, I don't know where
that was a quite invasive and long-term rant about the...
Yeah, that was. I've kind of been knocked back by that a little, so my thoughts are not fully coherent anymore. Just I've been burned away by the blaze of your righteous ire.
Well, it's just, why do they think it's magnets? Magnets are not magic. They're very not much not magic. They've been around since the olden days, and everyone knows that things that have been around since the olden days can't be magnet.
But we're moving on to yet another animal.
But if you do have any views on magnets, do email us at studio@camfm.co.uk. Or if you're too lazy to email, go to the website at www.camfm.co.uk and send us a message via the website. Moving on.
We've got a Malaysian tiger who attacked a man. And his wife managed to beat it off using a wooden soup ladle.
Soup ladle.
Yeah.
A wooden soup ladle would stop a tiger.
Yeah. Yep, that was it. He tried hitting the tiger away in vain, and his wife saved his life by threatening it, wielding this wooden soup ladle.
Does it actually
hit it?
Did she just wield it?
She just wielded it. She just kind of waved it and like, be gone!
Well, perhaps we just found some sort of innate natural enemy of the tiger. Hitherto, people haven't known that tigers evolved in a place where they had feral soup ladles wandering around. And soup ladles are a little known top of the food chain around tiger areas. And tigers are genetically programmed to run away from soup ladles whenever they see them.
Yeah, cause there's one other thing here about all the stuff that Tambun Gedyu
noble effort again there, I think.
Did to try and escape from the tiger, tried climbing a tree but was dragged down, and then was used all his strength to punch the animal in the face and was trying to wrestle it to keep its jaws away. And there's all this that said he's done, but it just says, it would have clawed me to death if my wife had not arrived. It still doesn't say what she did.
I like the idea that all the wives in China sit there and go, oh, look at these men. They can't get it right.
Malaysia.
They're being chased. Is it Malaysia?
Sorry. Malaysia.
All these wives in Malaysia getting upset by all these men walking around, always running away from tigers. All they know is they had a soup ladle out. Nothing can argue with a soup ladle. It's fine. All these very sort of practical, stout, probably, women, in my mind, probably quite fearsome looking.
It's interesting what he was being sent to do beforehand. He was trailing a squirrel and crouched to shoot it with his blowpipe.
He was what?
He was trying to shoot a squirrel with his blowpipe.
Well, you see, why do we not have people complaining about that from an animal rights issue? I mean, that's clearly trying to insert something in an animal that shouldn't be there, right? Whereas we're no longer supposing that he's trying to insert things in the squirrel. He actually is, with his blowpipe. He's trying to shoot them with it. Perhaps the tiger was a member of the local animal rights aspect. They were enraged at the mistreatment of squirrels.
There's a brilliant just caption on a photograph. There's a photograph of a tiger, probably not the tiger, but with a caption saying, "Tigers do not usually attack humans, nor do they often have to fend off soup ladles."
That is true. It is true.
The two might possibly be connected. If you don't usually attack humans, you're unlikely to get Malaysian wives attacking you with a soup ladle.
That's true, actually. I mean, I don't usually attack a human, and I don't usually have to fend off a soup ladle. So perhaps I should try this now. Like, experimentally, I'll find a human, attempt to attack them. Perhaps I'll find someone who's trying to attack squirrels with a blowpipe. That'd be a good plan. Mm. And if I menace them, I'll wait for their wife to appear and see if they're going to threaten me with a soup ladle. And I would actually find it quite threatening to have a soup ladle waved at me. They're quite, you know, you could do some clonking damage with a soup ladle.
Can you imagine it being quite hefty?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So, yes, there's an exciting scientific experiment that Rich has proposed to go and do. And
yes, and if anyone knows me, please don't chase me with a soup ladle. I'm actually developing a little bit of an irrational fear about soup ladles now. Now I'm thinking about having all my friends chase me with pitchforks, torches and soup ladles. It's quite terrifying.
This is how the tigers first got their soup ladle phobia. The same can happen to you.
Absolutely.
If you've got any comments about wanting to chase Rich with a soup ladle, you can email them in studio@camfm.co.uk. Or going onto our website, www.camfm.co.uk. And we'll be back with more weird news stories after this.
Your city.
Your station. Your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst of All on Cam FM. That was McFly with Party Girl. And we're moving on to the last section of the show now, where we decided to drop themes entirely because all the other news stories aren't easily categorised into those themes.
Although, if anyone does have a great suggestion for what a theme could be, do email into the show.
The first one is the fact that there was a complaint when a man painted his council bungalow fluorescent blue.
Now, the reason that he painted this bungalow fluorescent blue was an interesting one. Now, apparently, his wife was quite sad. Aww, I can have a big aww from the assembled Cam and Penn audience.
Aww.
Thank you. And he decided, what's the one thing I can do to cheer my wife up, to show her how much I love her? And he thought, buy flowers. No. Buy chocolates. No. Take her off on holiday. No. I'll paint the house blue while she's at work.
And he got lots of complaints from neighbours who
don't like the colour blue.
Yeah, apparently.
And that was
it doesn't look particularly fluorescent from the pictures that we've got.
Yes, now we have two pictures of the bungalow before and after the painting was remedied. And before, it looks like a blue bungalow. In fact, it looks like the sort of prefab building that you used to have at school when something got burnt down. You know, the sort of temporary classrooms that were invariably erected in the 60s.
That sounds worrying about what was going on at your school if you were getting prefab.
See, I just assumed that all schools had buildings that regularly burnt down and had to have prefab buildings put in their place. Perhaps my school was unique in this regard. However, the proposed solution, which has made all the residents happy, is to paint it instead green. And not just any green. It's the sort of green that you would sort of get in a horrific minty green flavoured confectionery sweet thing.
It does look like mouthwash, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It looks now like you should be able to smell its minty freshness. You should be able to lick there and have your tongue tingle if you were to lick a bungalow, which I don't think is necessarily a good idea.
But he's also got a green bench out the front, and I'm just wondering whether he repainted the bench again, because that's a completely different green.
Do we have the bench in the original picture?
No, sadly the original picture's a different angle, so you can't see if there's a bench there or not. I think one of them's around the front of the house and one of them around the back of the house.
Now, it's interesting that the only reason that Wrexham Council could step in is because it was actually a council bungalow, not a privately owned bungalow. So if it were a privately owned bungalow, then he could have just spurned his neighbours and gone, "No, I wish to remain my bungalow being this wonderful blue colour. What are you going to do about it?" Now, there could have been protests, letters in the Times, the various usual thing. I imagine the Sun would have got involved at some point, save our bungalows or something like this.
Yeah. Basically, the story just seems much ado about not very much.
Absolutely, yes. Yes, indeed.
That sums it up, thankfully.
So, moving on to other towns. So, Wrexham is a town. And what else is a town?
Speed is a town in Australia. And also, this we're also carrying across the theme of changes as well.
Yeah, so because already we have the running theme of towns and change, which is
more than we normally manage.
Yeah, which is in fact twice as much as the Obama campaign managed. They only had change, didn't have towns. No point did Obama go, "Yes, we can have towns."
But now there's a town called Speed
in Australia,
in the countryside of Victoria, and they're changing their name now to Speed Kills. Which their aim is to try and get people to slow down on country roads. But to me, it just makes it sound like they're saying, "This town kills."
Did you just say crunchy roads?
Country.
I'm sure you said crunchy roads. I mean, also, if the road is particularly crunchy, it should be slow down. What I particularly like is that they've advertised this rename in a sign. When you enter the Speed city limits, it says a sign saying, "We've now renamed our town Speed 2. And then in very big letters, "Speed Kills," with underneath it, "Like this on Facebook." Now, who's going to go to Facebook and like "Speed Kills"? And what sort of person is going to sit there and go, "Do you know what I really like? The fact that if you speed, you can kill someone. Isn't that brilliant?" And that will come up on your Facebook feed profile, and all of your Facebook friends will sit there and go, "So, I see, Ian, he really likes it when speed kills people, does he?" Assuming that, of course, you're talking about speed as in speeding in a car, not just sort of films with Keanu Reeves in.
But it could also be the drug as well.
Oh, that is true. I suppose that's a laudable aim. But you know, possibly protesting against Keanu Reeves films is less laudable.
But one thing is that's the problem with Facebook. You can like something, that's it. You can't say, I agree with this sentiment. I think that this sentiment is true.
It's impossible to enter into reasonable and sensible discourse on Facebook. You have a single impulsive act, and that's liking. And I don't like that.
Just like start of a Facebook group saying something along the lines of, "I think that an option to like is not sufficient to convey how I feel about somebody else's status update." And then, ironically, you will probably get loads of people liking it.
See, if only on Facebook there's a way to take someone's status update and in some sense write some sort of free-form comment on it rather than just singularly liking it. If only there was such a situation on the Facebook website. It would be amazing, wouldn't it? It would be a whole new paradigm in Web 2.0 technology. It would be veritably Web 3.0.
You seem to have missed the point that people can't be bothered to write. They like being able to click.
Well, in which case you'd have a sort of drop-down list, you know, like, dislike, generally apathetic, think it's quite funny but don't want to show any necessary favouritism towards you, or just fancy this person. I think just fancy this person would be often used. I have one particular friend who likes everything by a particular girl because he really likes her.
I'm not sure whether that's awe or worrying.
Yeah, it's a little bit worrying, isn't it?
A little bit both, really.
A little bit odd.
They've gone a little bit further.
If you are that friend, by the way, do email studio@camfm.co.uk and we'll read out a message to the girl of your choice over the air.
One member of the town of Speed has also changed his name. There's a guy there, a local wheat and sheep farmer called Phil Down, who will now be known as Phil Slow Down. Again, sounds like an instruction to him rather than anything. Rather than saying other people should slow down, it sounds like he should slow down.
Perhaps he's the biggest speeder in the
Phil,
town. Who knows?
Slow down! Apparently road safety officials in Victoria have already identified 5 towns in the United States called Speed, so they're hoping that they'll change their name as well.
I'd like to think one of them will change their name to Speed Up, just to be contrary to the situation. So they go, yeah, speed up. It's the exciting town where everything goes a lot faster.
Mm. Also, this is only happening for a month, so speed only kills for a month, apparently.
Oh, really? Well, it's true that, March is the month of speed killing.
What happens if you send a letter to Speed Kills Victoria, Australia, and it arrives after the name has changed back?
Oh, well, it'll be sent back to you saying, no, it doesn't, I think. So our current theme has been towns, change, Facebook, and something which contains none of those is Moby Dick.
You said that, and we've got a perfectly nice Facebook story to go on to.
Well, we'll go on to the Facebook story then. I was going to save it until last.
Aww.
But no, we'll go on to the Facebook story. Go on. I wasn't aware this was your show. Oh, wait. Actually, it is your show. I'm sorry.
No.
Do what you want.
We'll go with Facebook. This way, we've got at least a continuous chain of themes, even if we're not keeping all the themes.
We can work change and town into this story. So what is the story about Facebook? The listeners are quite literally not on the edge of their seats waiting to hear this.
Research has shown that people with the most Facebook friends, and friends, of course, being in quotation marks here because, as we all know, Facebook friends aren't necessarily friends in the real sense of you actually caring about the person.
Absolutely. In fact, my Facebook friends list is just an anthology of people I dislike.
I'm on your Facebook.
Apart from you, Michael, you're in my special friendship group. There is actually an application on Facebook for like special friends where you can put friends that are even better friends than actual friends.
But people with the most friends on Facebook are most likely to feel stressed out by the site.
That's true. That's beautiful. And I like the idea that, so that apparently Edinburgh Napier University, which is Edinburgh's equivalent of our Anglia Ruskin University, they found a significant minority of users suffered considerable Facebook-related anxiety.
Well, apparently more than 1 in 10 said Facebook made them feel anxious, and more than 30% said they felt guilty about rejecting friend requests. Which is one of those things, you occasionally get random friend requests, and it's like, this person I knew from primary school, and they stole my pens. That's not the basis of a friendship.
That's not really, and that's possibly the only thing you can remember about them. I was recently just friended by someone on Facebook who was the little sister of a friend of mine who I only knew for the first 3 years of primary school.
your brain's been mangled by Facebook. Just adding Facebook into every into Facebook sentence. Yes, Facebook.
I'm starting to sound like the news at the moment, which assumes that every significant political process in the world is organised entirely by Facebook. But I have no problem making accepting friendship requests on Facebook, as long as people don't actively dislike. It's not stressful to me. I just sit there and go, In fact, there's not even a no button. There's a yes button and ignore button. So it's there to make you not feel stressful, because you're not actually saying no. You're just sitting there going, think about it later, where later is infinitely far in the future.
But also, no, ignore, it could be also harsher, because like if someone comes up to you and asks you a yes or no question, ignoring them is, in fact, far more aggressive and socially awkward than just saying no.
That's the sound of me ignoring Michael.
Yes, do not adjust your set. but people, the doctor, Dr. Kathy Charles, said that the ones who had the most contacts could be most stressed because they feel under pressure to come up with updates about their life for a large number of people.
Now, I have over 100 followers on Twitter. Admittedly, some of those are relatively unexciting followers, and a number of them are strangely named lady avatars who try to sell me things. But I don't feel stressful about updating things on Twitter. I don't feel stressful about updating things on Facebook, because, in essence, they're used for two purposes. One, you find some sort of very funny comic about cats, and you cut and paste it into the share box, ho ho ho. Or you sit to have whiny emo updates about your life, which you don't have to be stressful about coming up with those. You should be stressful about the fact they exist.
Yes. So, yes, it says, you're almost a mini-celebrity. Do you feel like a mini-celebrity, Rich?
In the sense that people care and are interested in what I do? No. In the sense that I can quite easily alienate a fixed number of people? Yes. If I were to sit and send to all my Facebook friends a long, in-depth message about how much I hate them, then yes, I would have the downside of celebrity thrust upon me, the way where you can suddenly be shunned by your previous fan base. But in general, I don't think, I mean, I may not be narcissistic enough here, but I don't think that all my Facebook friends are sitting there hanging off my every word.
Apparently, it's also like being a mini news channel about yourself.
Now, I believe we have an email about Facebook, do we not?
Yes, we do. Just going a bit more related to the previous story. Anne, has suggested that the Town of Speed should change its name to Speed Dating to tie in nicely with Facebook. And Anne has said that they'd like that town.
Oh, how very, very sweet. I think that's possibly more that Anne really wishes there were more speed dating events around and has hoped that by changing the names of various towns of speed dating, she'll promote speed dating in the same way that Speed Kills hopefully is promoting speed killing. They're probably not really promoting it, are they? They're more sort of attempting to raise awareness. So perhaps she's trying to raise awareness of speed dating as a thing which is bad and should be stopped.
Oh, I think that is good. I don't think it's necessary that we should tar all town name changing campaigns with the same brush.
I suppose you're right.
And so going back to the Facebook stress side of things, it just seems that people are taking this far too seriously. All the calls of attention, including purging unwanted contact cuts. Oh, no, pardon me. Purging unwanted contacts. Purging sounds a bit... That's emotive language being used right there.
Well, so presumably this is the effect that... So I don't know if you ever played the Who Do I Like the Most game on Facebook. But you can quite often type the name of a person typing the name of a person into Facebook in the search box. And if you get as far as a single letter, see who that person is. And if that person is someone you wish to talk to, then that's actually quite interesting. If it's someone totally annoying, then that just means that it's more time for you to type in to find someone you're actually interested in. So they should be expurged from your contact list. You should be forceful about this. Anyone with more than 100 Facebook friends is worthless. And I'm not just saying that because when you've got 100 Facebook friends.
Well, we just had another email through. If someone ignores your Facebook friend request, it doesn't tell you, so you might just think they haven't got around to responding. But if there was a no button, perhaps it would tell you that people have rejected your friend request, and that would definitely be harsher.
It would indeed be harsher, but it would be quite fun if you could somehow hack it, so you could reject friendship address that you never got in the first place. So if you got a message saying that David Cameron has rejected your friendship request on Facebook, you'd be going, oh... That raises the number of questions.
You just want it to... Because you are feeling bitter, and you just want to say to everyone, even those who haven't asked to be your friend on Facebook, that you didn't like them anyway, and you don't want to be their friend.
Exactly. You could just send... In fact, can't you just do that with messages? You could send a special message that says, this isn't a rejection of friendship request because you haven't sent one, but if you were, I wasn't going to accept it anyway. You would have to be a sort of bitter, twisted, hate-filled individual to do that sort of thing, and I haven't done that before. Ever.
Before yet.
Although, no one let me near a computer within the next 10 minutes. Oh, okay. God, there's one in the studio. Quick, log on to Facebook.
Moving on, before Rich does something that he might regret, we've got one last story, which is about Moby Dick. Well, it's not really about Moby Dick.
No, so it's about Moby Dick in the same way that the Romans were inspired, in some sense, by the Greeks, and the Greeks were presumably inspired by a selection of early Hellenistic tribes. And those people were inspired by people coming out of Africa. So you could therefore say that all viaducts are due to Africans.
But
using that same level of logic...
That US marine archaeologists have found the whaling ship, which apparently belonged to the captain who inspired the captain in Moby Dick.
Yes, so this is very much... So last time I was on here, we had a new story about a school not being opened by one of the Chuckle Brothers, which again had these sort of 3 degrees of separation between the headmistress of this school and Barry Chuckle. So now, how many degrees of separation do we have between this ship and Moby Dick, the white whale?
Well, so you've got the real captain...
It's
the
a ship
captain.
That was owned by the captain,
yep.
who inspired the fake captain, who was set in a book about a whale called Moby Dick.
Yeah, but if you're like going fake captain book Moby Dick, then why are you adding that extra?
Okay, a fake captain appearing with Moby Dick, but even so, it's a bit of a stretch. So, having neatly said that this new story is worthless, what is the new story?
Basically, they found. The remains of the vessel, the two brothers, in shallow waters off Hawaii.
What I particularly like is that this was discovered by America's National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, which I think is a brilliant name for a organisation that primarily deals with things about flooding and large-scale oceans and all these sort of large bits of water. I think that somewhere someone's really proud of that and go,
It's taken them so long to come up with that. They've not done any work. They've just come up with a name.
Exactly. I like to think that somewhere in the 50s, when they were setting this up, I assume that everything was done in the 50s because it was a long time ago, that they sat there brainstorming names that they could fit in with these sort of oceanographic themes.
But the sinking in the Tuba was relatively uneventful compared with the ship, the Essex, running with a sperm whale in 1821.
So what they're saying here is not only is this ship used to be owned by someone who inspired a fictional character, but the actual real life exploits of this ship were significantly less interesting than those of the
previous
fictional ship. This is a good story, isn't it?
No, this is his previous, I'm assuming, previous ship, the Essex.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which was rammed by a whale and sank, providing the narrative for the book. So there is a
reasonable thing.
But this ship wasn't the one that really was inspiring the book.
So this is the ship which came after the ship
that got sank by the
whale. Was owned by the captain that was inspired the story. So this is a Barrow Chuckle story all over again. This is brilliant.
And that's what we're going to have to end on. Thank you very much and good night.